This is the Planning Commission work session for Thursday, March 3rd, 2016.
Good?
Yep.
Okay, again, my name is Matt Herman. I'm with our County Community Planning. Work in the transportation planning section. So tonight, I'm going to be basically giving you an overview of the capital facilities plan that we do as part of the comp plan update. The whole reason behind this presentation is because it's going to be coming at you rather quickly in the next couple months. And I want to make sure that you guys have a background as far as how our process works and our analysis that goes into our capital facilities. So the agenda today includes an overview of the capital facilities plan as well as an overview of our existing efforts for the CFP. I'm going to be using some acronyms tonight, so I want to make sure that those are clear to you. Capital Facilities Plan I'll be referring to as CFP. GMA, Growth Management Act, obviously. UGA, Urban Growth Areas, and LOS, Level of Service. So we'll go through the presentation then.
Local what service?
Level of service.
Level of service.
So we'll be going over the presentation and then I'll be happy to answer any questions. So within the GMA Growth Management Act, we have a statute that doesn't specifically define what capital facilities are. So it's each jurisdiction's own discretion to define what those are. Currently, in our adopted capital facilities plan, we have these facilities detailed. Some of those are external providers that are the service agencies, and some of them are us as the county. For instance, Water CPU provides a great amount of service to the unincorporated rural area. Sewer, public schools obviously is split up by districts, as well as fire protection is split up by various districts. Storm drainage is handled through our Department of Environmental Services, law enforcement through the sheriff, government buildings through our own General Services Department, Parks Department through our Public Works Department, as well as transportation. So, the process of going through our capital facilities plan analysis is basically these four steps: our inventory, our forecast, our needs, and our financing plan. And I'll get into the details of this, each of these different steps throughout the presentation. The reassessment occurs when, just to begin, these are the minimum steps that are needed by, defined by GMA. It includes both the 6-year financing plan as well as a long-term look for the 20-year plan on what facilities are needed to support that growth. The reassessment happens when we cannot fund the growth. GMA provides us different opportunities to go back and reassess how to look at our how to fund our capital facilities plan or redefine our growth. It includes strategies like reducing demand through demand management strategies.
What does that mean?
So that means finding out a different strategies for having people in transportation. It's having carpooling, having different mechanisms that reduce the impact.
Land management? That wouldn't be carpooling.
No, reducing demand through demand management. Not land management.
Okay, thank
demand
you.
Demand management. So it's managing that demand so that it's less of an impact on the system. Reducing level of service standards, identifying new revenue streams, reducing the cost of the needed facilities, reallocating and redirecting the plant population. And those are specifically defined within the management plan.
Okay, so the last one you said was what I was thinking of, reallocating the plant population. In other words,
go back to it.
Shrinking the growth boundary, most likely.
Shrinking the growth boundary. I mean, urban growth boundary is established, as we did about 5 years ago, 6 years ago. You can actually shrink it.
Can it be done?
Yeah.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, the capital facilities plan statutes direct the county to look at that if we cannot finance
the growth,
the capital facilities to support growth.
Has it ever been done?
Not here.
What would happen then, like, you take an area, it's in the rural zoning, you bring it into the urban, and decide you can't serve it, the people have done things under that new boundary?
No, so what would happen would be, the proposal is out there to expand the UGB. You go through the capital facilities plan analysis, as we're doing now. You find out that you can't fund that growth to support it. So you go back and say, we can't fund this UGB expansion. This is a, we have to reallocate where our population
is. This is why when areas come into the urban growth boundary, as a rule, they are given an urban holding overlay designation, which gets removed usually. But it varies. When a determination can be made that the capital facilities are or will be adequate to serve the urban development.
That includes transportation, obviously.
Yeah. So, again, there's multiple strategies for when you cannot fund your capital facilities plan. Usually, that reallocating the plant population is not the first. So, capital facilities plan is specifically defined in WAC 365, 196, 415. But besides that specific state law, there's other state laws that we consult with when doing our capital facilities plan. It includes the concurrencies law, our impact fees, land uses, planning development within the urban growth areas, providing urban services within WAC 365, 196, 320, as well as the countywide urban services. So, first step is the inventory. This process we've started and are basically completed for this current update. The inventory includes consulting with our providers, all the providers in the county, to find, to make sure we document what is existing on the ground and what is in place. It includes both tables as well as maps that we'll find when the capital facilities plan comes through. The needs, there's basically three areas where needs come from when we look at our analysis. They come from our systems preservation, our existing deficiencies, and our new growth. Our systems preservation would be such things like what we have today, what is existing today, making sure that that is in a good standing, good structure for the future, as well as the existing deficiencies, things that we know that need to be rehab right now, fixing those, and then finally the new growth.
And would you say that that is in the order of priority, the way it's listed there?
I think they're all important. I don't know if I would define them as a priority.
So the county doesn't have a policy towards prioritization of funding?
We prioritize funding within our six-year TIP, Transportation Improvement Program, and then within the capital facilities plan. So the, I'm getting kind of ahead of myself, but the TIP is the six-year implementation. It's when funding is defined and secured, whereas the 20-year is the floor cost.
Okay, I'll defer the question, but I'd like you to address it during the presentation.
So, in forecasting, we have to use a specific measure level of service standard so that we can make this process of identifying our needs objective rather than a subjective notion. So we have a level of service standard based on our concurrency code. This is our volume to capacity ratio. Currently, in the urban area, when the volume to capacity ratio exceeds 0.9, it goes into concurrency failure, and we identify a solution to that. We also have level of service for intersections and the delay that's associated with those. Another example of a level of service would be in law enforcement. We measure our level of service based on officers per population, as well as the amount of commercial and industrial acreage. There's obviously these are only two of the elements of the capital facilities plan. There's other level of service measures for the other providers.
When you're talking about law enforcement and officer population, does it take into effect the amount of area as well? I mean, it's probably one officer can serve a lot more people in the unincorporated area within the Evergrove area than if it's the same number of people spread out.
Sure. Yeah, the distribution of people plays a factor, and that's more of a consultation directly with the sheriff's office.
Thank you.
So part of identifying the and forecasting the needs of planning is to correct any deficiencies, as I mentioned before. The county and special districts like CPU, for instance, have these LOS standards that we strive to achieve. And then the underserved areas are brought up to that standard through each element's capital improvement. The growth can cause an increase in need in a couple different ways. One is related to that increase of people, which is basically population as well as employment growth. And then the other is that expansion, so that distribution of people plays an important factor for achieving that level of service demand. And basically that different distinction between the growth of the population as well as the distribution is central to managing our infrastructure costs. The forecasting analysis should identify any projected level of service shortfalls. It's important to acknowledge that new facilities that serve new growth have a capital expense with the construction of that facility, as well as once that facility goes in, there's a maintenance cost that's associated with it. So not only should the capital facilities plan capture what's needed, but also maintenance and operations to serve that facility into the future. So we move on from the forecast onto the financing plan. Financing plan consists of both revenues and costs. Mr. Barca, the capital facilities plan is separated into that six-year transportation improvement program as well as that 20-year capital facilities plan. So the difference between the two is specifically in the Growth Management Act, the requirement is to have your six-year implementation plan financially secure, meaning your projects that are needed in those first 6 years have funding streams identifying and locked in for those future projects. Within years 7 and 20, that is more, not as much as a requirement, more of a reasonable funding capacity. So if we have a capital facilities plan where there's a deficit, we have to show how we're making up that deficit. State law specifically mandates that the six-year financial plan, but again, it's less regulatory for that 7 to 20 years. So while the state law says you must plan for that six-year financial plan, it's a should statement for the 20-year financial plan. But with all due respect to that, the Growth Management Hearings Board has consistently read that the GMA is required that estimates for revenues meet the estimated expenses for the 20-year plan period, or the reassessment of the land use plan would be required. Additionally, it's also useful to identify the financial policies regarding capital facilities in writing so that we can provide guidance to decision makers over time, as well as inform citizens of where the expenses and costs are. So, we go through our analysis of the capital facilities plan, but it's also vitally important to have that coordination and consistency in place. So the Growth Management Act calls for consistency among all elements of the comp plan. Perhaps the most significant consistency requirement in the GMA is that the capital budget decisions are consistent with the comp plan. The WAC provides guidance on how these relationships between the capital facilities element and this land use element interact. Specifically, it states, providing adequate public facilities is a component of the affirmative duty created by the Act for counties and cities to accommodate the growth that is selected and allocated to provide sufficient capacity of land use suitable for development and to permit urban densities. So this is basically why the capital facilities plan follows the land use plan, because it supports the land use plan, and that coordination and consistency has to be maintained.
I have a question just back to the other slide where you said that there has to be that's not it. The one where you're talking about the budget, really basically the ability to pay for this 20-year plan. And if you can't pay for the 20 years, the land use has to be adjusted?
No.
That's what it sounded like.
No. So it has many different options. It has adjust your level of service to a lower standard, finding a different funding mechanism,
I think my point is that 20 years in advance is a crystal ball.
Yep.
And nobody has a crystal ball that's truth, you know. So year 7 through 20, I mean, is there some point? I mean, otherwise it's just pretend.
But we're passing the 20-year growth plan, so you're saying that
you're cognizant enough
of what you put on the table to say you're able to fund it. And if you can't fund it, what happens normally is you adjust your funding mechanism. And you go forward.
It seems a responsible plan to do it. I mean, you have to generally look out there and say, if we're going to plan something 20 years out, we have to have a general idea of and 1 through 6 years is, it needs to be locked in funding.
Yeah.
So 7 through 20, you're saying if you're going to plan it, how you
you should, well,
you can't,
I guess,
just put,
I guess what I'm
out.
Saying is that a bunch of accountants are just running a bunch of numbers and hoping that things are as we expect they will be.
That prices don't go up.
Well, I'm sure that they account for that.
But it would be irresponsible if you made a plan without.
I understand that. I guess the part that got to me, it's not up there anymore, but it said something about readjusting what I read. Maybe I misunderstood my reading, readjusting basically what you've done with land use, which is fine. But you put forth all this work in deciding for 20 years what you're going to do, and then if some kind of financial downturn or, you know.
So this is specifically issued in the WAC. So I'm reading straight from the WAC.
Uh-huh.
And what it says, when funding cannot be secured for that 20 years, you have different options. One of those options is to reassess.
Okay. And then others is to raise the...
Yes.
Right. And to echo Martha, you may have already talked about that. I'm sorry I'm late. I'll talk about that a little bit later. But part of the measures you have to take is you either reassess your level of service, you can identify other funding sources. The last resort is for you to adjust your land use.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which seems like it should be.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that means if, assuming the boundary that you said were too big for you to afford to service that area, you can, the last resort is for you to
move
scale
it
back.
Yeah.
Speaking of your point on 20-year crystal ball, it's been about 6 years now since we adjusted the last urban growth boundary.
Yeah,
your base source.
2007,
right. If we go back and look and say, okay, we changed it 7 years ago, how's our funding going?
9 years ago.
9 years ago?
Yes.
Well, have we gone back and looked at how's our funding doing?
That was basically alternative one when we did the review, was saying land use size and available funding. That was the no change alternative for us, as we were within our boundaries of that 20-year plan.
But we have answered my question, do we go back and reevaluate?
Yes, we do.
Yeah.
And the Planning Commission, if you recall, in 2014-15, you reviewed the Capital Facilities Plan for Transportation, and that was somehow readjusted to identify what we can reasonably fund. That was part of that exercise. We went from, in terms of the project list identified, from $1 billion to $500 million. And you approved that, and we also looked at how we measure concurrency. That was part of that review.
Level of service.
The reason why I'm asking, you could talk to Public Works, you could talk to Environmental, Stormwater, whatever. They're all saying we haven't got enough money.
They always say.
Yeah.
For everything.
Well, projects are going
wanting. They have a reason for that. Some of it is all capital. Yeah. What do you do? The county in the last couple of years have not raised the stormwater fee, for example. And they just recently did that. Now they have a surplus. But that surplus is not death to fund other things. It's just, okay, how do we not necessarily look to feed, but how do we continue to keep up in maintaining our, for example, our stormwater facilities? There's some cases where the county will absorb private stormwater facilities and integrate it into our own, but it's still going to continue to maintain that. That fund is going to help with that capital improvement. So there's always continuously readjusting. If you recall, the school district capital facilities plan that you reviewed, that was based on the current plan, and you can see what the fees were, which you approved reluctantly, I would say, but you did approve that. But that's all based on the 07 plan.
So Richfield, where the impact fees jumped significantly, had the plan put, for alternative, put a lot more population in the rural areas, specifically in Ridgefield or Valleydale school districts.
Yes.
They probably would have come back for another fee increase.
Yes. They would have, we would have asked them to readjust or review the CMP and come back, yes. Just as an example, you're right.
So good segue, because that's what we're currently working on right now, is we're reaching out to our external providers, so our school districts, the wastewater treatment, CPU, as well as the cities, to really have a frank conversation with them on where the new growth is going and how we're going to pay for that through their needs. We're reaching out to them. We have been for the past month, find out how the new plan will affect their services and if they'll be able to provide services for the population. We collect information from them. We collect the existing capital improvement programs that they have in place, as well as summarize what their general plans state so that we can implement that in the text. And then we make sure that we have all the information that we need to move forward with our facilities. So within the comp plan, there are annual amendments that come before you. This is a good time for corrections, clarifications, but periodic updates, as we are in today, are the ideal time to bring the comp plan and the implementation regulations together. It's also an opportunity for us to reassess the vision and progress for completing tomorrow's achievements. As I said before, the steps of this are to update that inventory, both for us as well as the service providers, and to assess the progress that we've made. And finally, it winds up in an update of that implementation plan for the county as a whole that incorporates all of those external providers. So, also with the monitoring and evaluation, it's done when we do update it through both this periodic review and should it happen during annual reviews. We do it in the light that what new data has come forward, are there different circumstances that are there that weren't there before, and then we adjust the capital facilities plan accordingly. As some of you probably remember, the concurrency code that Oliver spoke to earlier was amended in 2014. This changed the level of service from a time perspective to a mobility perspective. We used to measure our concurrency based on how the time that a trip would take from one intersection to the other. Now it's based on our value to capacity ratio. So when we changed this concurrency method, we reduced the capital facilities plan from $1 billion project, precisely $952 million, to the existing $532 million facilities plan. So that's an example of changed.
But we're not going to continue lowering levels of service as our only method, are we?
No. That level of service standard was went through the process to be an everlasting level of service standard.
I just wanted to clarify that. Thank you.
I'm not sure we can guarantee that.
Everlasting.
Well, yeah.
You know,
it's not right word,
that's the plan.
It's a decision of the board.
Well, at some point in time, it's not really a level of service then.
It's a level of disservice?
When you get to a D class of anything, yes.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Right?
Anything D, and you're not really, you know, you can sit at the intersection as long as you can, but anything D, you already to F, E, and you can. can't, you don't have anything else to measure really.
So one of the things I'm wondering about, the last time we went through an in-depth look at this, there was a discussion about significant bridges throughout the county that were deemed in poor shape or in failure mode based on Department of Transportation evaluations. And it seems like we continue to try and slide them in on the six-year plan, but they're often the ones that are slipping down. Do we have any kind of time frames in which we just would pin on those types of pieces of infrastructure and say we will have it done no later than? Is that part of our mechanism?
The county has no structurally deficient bridges. We have bridges that are functionally obsolete, which means are not serving the intended traffic that's on it today. Maybe that's shoulders or horizontal vertical curves, who knows, whatever. But there are no bridges, I can tell you, in Clark County's jurisdiction that are not structurally sufficient. So we have not.
The seismic standards that are in place?
We are updating seismic and scour. We've been kind of taking them one or two at a time, and we're actually almost done with our list of priorities for that work as well. There's a few bridges up, I think, that they're still applying for funds on, but we've been securing a lot of federal funds to take care of those. So we've been plugging at them in our six-year program. And there's in your CFP is a bridge
program,
ongoing program.
Yeah.
So.
Great, yeah. That's good to hear. Thank you.
Yep.
So to conclude, we want to ensure that our jurisdiction, Clark County, can meet the adopted level of service with the growing population. And this itself is not a small feat. We want to invest in our facilities where we want the growth to occur, as dictated by our preferred alternative. We want to understand how the growth patterns affect the needed investments. And we also want to be cognizant that the new residents don't significantly, that the growth, the needs are there before the citizens reside there. So it's important to kind of get ahead of the game and to be able to forecast that precisely and make our capital facilities plan respond to that. Most people tend to understand that infrastructure can be built by others and then deeded to the public, and that has both short-term and long-term costs, for maintenance and operations. But eventually they need significant repair. So it's important that our capital facilities plan has both the preservation and operations dollars in it so that we can both help those services and maintain our current infrastructure. We're also having to work with our providers and have that consistent and ongoing coordination with them so that their needs as well as our needs are both covered and we're working together. And with that, that's the end of my presentation. So you had a question previously that you wanted to defer.
It had to do with the prioritization of the six-year plan and what projects were on it based on the three criteria. Was it new growth? Was it maintenance and repair? Was it upgrade for level of service? Just clearly, I think understanding that helps us with the idea of where the priority scheme is. Of course, we need to prepare for the new growth, but at what cost to the existing infrastructure? I think your presentation is really well done in the context that it shows the idea of trying to establish the balance between all those things, and I think for us it's just very helpful to understand where the money's going.
And then as far as how projects flow from that big 20-year CFP to that 6-year, it's really the that constant monitoring of the service standards, finding out when they're in need of repair, and identifying those funding mechanisms to implement those needs.
I would only add that it is the board that establishes policy, whether it is to allocate more funding to preservation than building new ones. So those are policy calls at the board.
And all I'm looking for is transparency.
Yes.
I'm not even sure if it's appropriate. Once we've expanded the urban growth boundary to include this land, I'm not sure if it's even appropriate to say, well, we're going to give priority to people who already live here versus people who are moving here to this new land, which we already declared is now going to be urbanized. I mean, we have to balance it based on the needs of the individual project rather than trying to put it into different baskets of existing residents and people moving in.
Well, but deferred maintenance is more expensive maintenance. So I do think for fiduciary responsibility, it is important to have a clear understanding of what's getting deferred and what isn't. And level of service agreements are intended, I think, to give the public some form of confidence that we're not going to allow degradation.
So, we shouldn't be bringing the land in the first place if we can.
Well,
if we can't adopt a plan that says that it's reasonably likely that we're going
to
have it.
But that comes back to the policy decision. Yeah. We always want to bring the land in first. But is that planning?
I know, I was just whispering to Chris, and Chief already explained that. That's why we use urban molding, for example. Mm-hmm. And, you guys hear me say this, that it is our way of acknowledging that the infrastructure is not there, but we can use that as a tool to phase development and timing.
But we still shouldn't be bringing land in if we can't project that it will be served.
Isn't the heart of the Growth Management Act to state that you're not going to bring a population in until the facilities are already there?
The requirement is concurrency, not that the facilities come in first, but that the facilities are developed concurrently with the projects that create the need for them. And that can mean that they are developed 6 years after, up to 6 years after.
Full funding. Has to be fully funded.
Right.
Yes.
So the funding has to be in place within 6 years.
Correct. Right.
Yes.
Well, there has to be a guaranteed funding.
A guaranteed funding.
But the actual funding doesn't have to happen for 6 years.
In know, at your request, we can ask DES to come and share that with you.
I would appreciate that.
Okay. We'll make a note of that.
There's no hearing on this in 2 weeks, correct? This is just the conversation.
Yeah.
This is kind of intro, so we know what it does. Okay.
Yeah. Right.
We want to adopt. I understand.
So what you're going to find is that you're going to have more work sessions, longer work sessions than you are hearings. There's only one hearing that's coming up. Is it April?
Yeah.
April? Marty's going to be here in April, right? So unfortunately, we've got a whole bunch of stuff coming your way, and we're still working on it. So what you have are the policies that Planning Commission looked at about 2 years ago. We went through all the chapters and recommended policies, right? And tonight, we've given you, in addition to those policies again, in this bigger binder, starting with tab number 9, you have the new introduction. You don't have oh, I'm sorry, mine says 9, but it's
2.
Or if you count, we don't have numbers.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We'll have numbers next time.
Okay, just count 9
of
that.
Well,
go to the random.
Okay,
the yellow
sheet.
The
introduction.
The yellow sheet.
Yeah, look for the yellow sheets. So what you have is a clean copy and a track change version of the easy chapters. So we've got introduction. We've got the school element. The community framework plan, annexation, procedures, glossary, figures, tables, easy stuff, okay? But the one chapter I want to go through a little bit is the annexation chapter. And let me start off by saying those policies that you saw about 2 years ago, they're now incorporated in the chapter. We didn't make any changes to them. They're just in there, okay, where they should be. So you should be able to match them up and backtrack. But in annexation, the big change here is that references to Fisher's Swale, things that have already been accomplished and completed have been removed.
So, I read about Fisher's Swale in here. It wasn't taken out. Was it? Maybe it was. I'm looking at what you sent to us through what we were sent in the mail, which I spent all day reading. So I had some markings on it. And so I remember Fisher's Swale. Where is the annexation
page,
in this?
Oh, it's on page 2. They scratched it out.
I was looking at this, what I had to work from.
So,
I
don't remember. 12.2.1 in the annexation section.
Okay.
That's, I don't think you have
it. Yeah, there is. It was here.
That one's
I remember reading it. Sorry, go ahead.
No,
I'll interrupt you later.
It's fine. So we took all those policies and we incorporated in the text, and then we updated the text to be more current. Okay. But the big change for the annexation chapter is that we've accomplished a lot of these things, so they're no longer relevant. So they're taken out. When you get into the procedures section, there's stuff in there about Three Creeks. Well, the Three Creeks overlay and everything to do with that is gone, right? So these chapters should be fairly easy for you guys to go through. When we meet again 2 weeks from now, if you have any questions, we'll go over that. Okay. What you'll see electronically next week are the economic development chapter, environmental, historic, and parks. They weren't quite ready for tonight, but we'll be able to email out the electronic versions, and then you'll have hard copies at your next meeting. So we'll keep feeding you stuff as we get them done. For the March 17th meeting, you'll also start getting Title 40 changes to be reflected of what we've done in the preferred map. As an example, there's a public facility zone now that we didn't have Title 40 text for, so that'll be new. Urban holding changed a little bit. They're now, the zone goes away and an overlay is going to be predominant, whereas today you've got both. Urban reserve is the same way. So there's a variety of changes that were part of the actions of Alternative 2 that you guys checked off on that you wanted to see. That's almost all Title 40 work. I'm hoping that we'll be able to give you all of the Title 40 changes in one big batch. That's our goal right now. Lori and Sharon are working on that. They tell me they should have it done next week, so you'll start getting those things. And I really apologize. You guys are just going to get stuff all over the place, all mixed up. We're going to do a wrap-up at the May meeting and put it all together, try and answer all the questions we can, if we haven't already answered them up to this, that point.
So when are we supposed to ask the questions?
At any time.
At any time, right.
When you say Title 40, you're in the whole development code?
No, sections of.
Only the changes.
Only
the parts that are affected by virtue of the preferred alternative.
Sorry, because I read section 41, so I don't want to do
So what we're going to do for Title 40, everything's contract change. We're going to give you not the whole chapter, like the, you know, the whole urban chapter of Title 40. We're going to give you just the section pieces that pertain where the changes are going to be. Okay? A lot of it's use tables that are changing, so you'll get the text before that to kind of put it in context as to where that table is. And if that doesn't work, we'll give you whatever it is you need. We're just trying to make it as easy as possible for you.
You know, this is something that Colette and I have worked in the past on, but this is every staff in my shop doing this, but Colette is taking the lead to put it together. We apologize, it's coming to you again, but in a different format. That's why last time I was here, I asked you, how do you want to receive this? Do you want to see the track changes? Do you want a clean copy? How soon do you want this? So we are making every effort to get this in your hands. We have been working on what alternative 4A, alternative 4B, changes in planning assumptions, you name it. Now we have a preferred plan. Things are beginning to sink in for us that we can be able to focus on making or proposing changes, if you will. At the same time we are providing this to you, we are also preparing a three-ring binder for the counselors so that they're receiving it simultaneously. We are really, time is of essence, and I don't want to use time to rush you or to have not provide opportunity for you to ask questions. So we are available. Call us as we come before you, ask us questions. Where you need clarification, we'll do our best to provide that. The reason these are in track changes is because we want to be able to share what is changing, if any, and what is new, so that you can be able to ask us questions and follow through what we are presenting before you. So we welcome questions. Before I leave that, yes, Colette has one more thing to go over with you.
I forgot to mention the countywide planning policies that was part of your packet from last week. There were two new policies included in there that we had talked about before. One had to do with creating a policy for an active aging community.
Yes.
And the other one had to do with shoreline, okay? We had a board work session last July, and we were instructed not to include those two new policies. So the only thing you will see in the chapters as they come forward as far as the county and planning policies are kind of the Scrivener things. We had to remove office campus, and there were a couple of section numbers that weren't quite right. But those two new policies are gone. I just wanted to let you know.
Before I leave, before we leave that, I thought they wanted the shoreline one to be in there, which the councillors have said. The shoreline master program is in there. Really? I thought you only wanted the growing healthier and aging to.
No, we're
not
sure enough.
On shoreline?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, you weren't here.
No, yeah. I was out. I didn't know. But it is the 14th goal. So you see how we are directed to do things.
Yep.
It is the 14th goal of the GMA, so if they're requiring us not to have a county-wide planning policy on it, that's their call. I know the cities, all the cities wanted this policy, so I'll leave it at that. I didn't know I was in
here. So the next three planning commission work sessions are going to be really heavy as far as content coming your way. And you know that you're having two joint hearings with the board in May, and then deliberations. We've got the hearing room booked for June 2nd.
Yes, Bill.
I had a question about the table that's shown in Chapter 7, your Chapter 7, Transportation and Public Facilities. And I was wondering.
Is that the county-wide planning policy?
Yes.
The county-wide planning policy?
Or the chapter. Chapter
and
7.
I'm wondering if what we're seeing here has also been commented on by Public Works or
yes.
At the same time?
Yeah.
They've seen it.
Public Works has reviewed all of these.
Where are you there?
Yeah, I see environmental.
He's in
the second set of tabs.
It's, tab 1, 2,
he's in Chapter 7,
4,
Transportation
5.
And Public Facilities.
5?
That's the fifth tab.
Right here.
There we go.
It's behind my tab number 5. Do you have tabs?
No.
The very front.
Tab 5, but we don't have tab 5, so we're probably going to make that up. But it is, says Transportation and Public Facilities.
Gary is
the author of the transportation chapter,
and
he's been working very closely with Public Works.
What was your question,
Bill? Well, I wanted to be sure that Public Works had already
done.
Comment on it, because there's some changes that could affect. Probably not a big deal.
Yes, to answer your question, yes, we are coordinating with Public Works. We have been reviewing this, and I know Caroline is over there, but yes, we are making sure that Public Works sees this before it is funded. I know that the last time we came to you, Steve was still here, and we did review Steve shortly.
And Gary's been working with Public Works as he develops a chapter. In fact, other departments like DES, so in the environmental chapter, for example, Sharon worked with DES and they reviewed that chapter before you see it. So it's all been vetted before it comes to here.
I didn't see a policy in there about a war on cars,
but it may come later.
Oh, okay.
In actual words?
Yeah.
In the plan, it looks like there is one.
Yeah.
Unless, of course, they don't take road space for bikes and
travel. Well, similar language has been in the plan for years and incorporated in the road standards.
Yeah.
It really is not particularly onerous.
Isn't it?
I
just know in Oregon they did a lot of changing and reducing, actually, they reduced car lanes and added bike lanes. Thereby,
I hope I have
creating
enough.
More congestion.
Yeah. I think if there's some problems, you'll be addressing that.
Yeah.
Okay. If you have no questions on this, again, we will provide cards. Sonia took note, and she other paths. So that will be coming. If you have no questions, let me just tell you quickly or go over quickly what I'm passing out. This is the action of the five new council members following their hearing on February 23rd. So you can see that the preferred plan that they approved is what I would call Planning Commission plus and minus. What I mean Planning Commission plus and minus, they did add item 2B, 2C, and you did not take any action on 2D based on 2B and C. So they approved 2B, 2C, and 2D going forward. Those are the 2B is reducing the minimum parcel size from add 20 to 10, and forest 40 to 20. And in the case of 2D, 20 acres, rural 20 to 10, in some cases where that will be applicable. We will have a map that shows where those will be applicable.
Pardon me, Oliver, but does it say 2C fails?
Well, that's Planning Commission. What I said is the council did Planning Commission plus and minus. I'm going through the pluses. Okay? That makes sense. The other pluses that they included is Richfield, adding 111 acres in the Richfield urban growth boundary, and also in the center, which you tied territory, so they added that with a provision that if those two cities UGB appealed, that those two cities will be defending that. Those are the pluses. Just want to go through that. The minuses include the removal of the 41 acres, which you did not even approve. Washougal's request to add 41 acres to their UGB. The board, I would say, agreed with your motion or with your vote. The minus is the Tri-Mountain Golf Course. The council removed that from the Center UGB. That is contrary to your recommendation. Those are the minuses. And I don't know if you have any questions. They did agree with you in not passing any of the alternative 4, call it 4A or 4B. So they agree with you on that. If you can see that on the last page 4. Recommendation to do something, you know, they struggle with that flexibility, opportunity for landowners who continuously own their properties since 1994. They struggle with how to do that, so their motion was no. But they may come back with a laundry list of what I may call cyber issues or what to do in the rural area until they provide that. I don't know.
Of course, they did add 2B, C, and D, which
yes.
Very specifically address the rural area.
Yes. Yeah. What you have is a supplemental staff report to the councilors. The only thing I will add there is that, just to focus on page 2 of that, because what that supplemental staff report represents was questions that the council asked of us at their hearing on February 16th. So we provided a supplemental staff report to answer those. And in there we included what are the next steps. Well, it started with us now re-engaging our consultant ESA to do the final environmental review. I am going to prepare a letter which the acting county manager is going to sign to officially ask Robert Tubb to put down his pen. He's done. So we are now engaging ESA to do the final ESA environmental review work. Matt Herman went through a very synopsis of what our capital facilities 101 needs. So we are engaging in developing our capital facilities plan, as well as what we call our capital facilities financial plan. We are going to run the urban vacant buildable lands. I use the word urban vacant buildable lands based on the preferred plan that the council has approved. The goal there is to say, okay, now that we have a preferred alternative plan, advancing that to the final EIS work, do we still have sufficient land within the boundary or within the preferred plan to accommodate the growth that the council have asked us to plan for? That would be the purpose of doing that. You heard Colette go over the comp plan text, which you're going to be reviewing, and then Title 40. Hopefully, in the next month or two, our consultant will issue the final environmental impact statement that will be out. We will provide you a copy of that. We are looking at still by April 30th of this month of this year to gather all that we can and see if we are at a point that we can send that to the Department of Commerce to start our CCD review. And then we will be coming to you with the issuance of the final SEIS and come engage you in our work sessions. You will have a copy of the final environmental impact statement as you review our work and what is in that final environmental review document. And we are going to be scheduling joint work sessions. If it's not already on the PC docket, I'm sure Sonia will put it up. Joint work session between you and the councillors for hearing. And then the planning commission will go separately to deliberate and make a recommendation to the council. The council will then start their own hearing and deliberation, and hopefully we'll get a decision by June 28th. It's really very tight. That's all I can say. So those are the next steps. I will not have time, and I will say this, I'm reaching out to my staff, asking them to come in on weekends to work so that we can see what we can accomplish given the short time frame we have now. I'm literally begging them to do that. I'm not taking any vacation, but if I have to, I will. But we have to do what we have to do to see where we are to get this thing done. They're working really hard. I commend them for doing so. Our goal is now to, you know, march forward and see what we can do to deliver on time. And I will make myself available, Gordy as well, collect my entire staff. Call us, ask us questions, we are available.
You're going to run into stuff as you read through this, and that's,
just call you.
Just give us a call. Yes,
yeah. Just give us a call.
Now, everybody has taken, in the department has a chapter or two they're doing, so you may have a question that I may refer you to Sharon, who worked on that chapter.
So I just found some things that might read better if some words were changed.
We work on that. So that's all I have.
So what happens if, after assuming the plan is adopted by the deadline of June 28th, then you get into the summer and fall and find out there's some things in the needs to get approval, like the motor boat or missed rectification? Or is there a process to make those amendments without turning the whole plan over?
Yes. We call it post adoption amendments. There could be scribner errors. We will come to you because those things are done legislatively. We will identify those, come to you, and then finally to the council. There may be, even what I may call this line should have gone this way on a map. It went this way. We will make those changes legislatively. I have no authority even to ask GIS to change the color of the map. I don't. It has to be done legislatively.
Quite honestly, we expect that there's going to be some stuff we missed just because of what's going on.
And I can tell you, this wasn't the way that I wanted the comp plan to be done. I think I came to you guys before. I said I wanted to really bring the comp plan text and put a lot of data as appendix and make it really easy to read, friendly to use, know what is the county policy on transportation, what is the county policy on land use, what is the county policy on housing. There's so many technical stuff that doesn't have to be in the comp plan. We can put that in appendix and with Firefox if you want, you know, inventory or background information, go here. But here's the policy document. That was my goal. I couldn't accomplish that now, but we can do that at the 11th hour. So I'll stop there and take questions that you may have. At DEEP this afternoon presenting this. A lot of folks wants to know what the board or the current council did. I can tell you that the preferred alternative is now on map online, so you can access it and see that if you like.
Yeah. Where is, how do you get to that? I've had a couple of people in my office ask where to find that.
Matt will show you how to do it. It's not. Our new website doesn't have a button on it anymore. You've got to go right.
It isn't. The new website is not user friendly. I don't know.
No, it's not.
It's not user friendly.
It will be.
So here's got to be friends.
I'm excited at least with
that. That is true.
That's
right.
Microsoft
Teams. I'm sorry.
Just
changed
to.
It
wasn't.
It wasn't. It wasn't.
Yeah. Yeah. All of
it.
Okay, so community planning.
Community planning.
No, this is the homepage. Yeah.
Okay, homepage.
Just click this.
Okay.
So show them how to do it if we didn't have the comp plan box there, because that's going to go away over time.
Okay. If we didn't have the...
So this summer when that box goes away.
The box is not going to go away before we adopt it.
The summer it'll go away, right?
Before we adopt. Okay.
No, no. After you adopt.
Here's the homepage. This is what you come to when you click on it. Go down here, apps online.
Okay.
Apps online.
You can click on this. So this is going to be a very generic map to begin with. If you go up here to map sites, see where I'm hovering at?
Yeah.
Click down below. You'll get this comprehensive growth management.
Interesting.
Thank you.
And then you can select the layers, your recommendation, what the preferred alternative is.
John, you have to turn the computer off here.
I hope you have the capacity to upload that. It is very slow. Some people have good powerful computers, so yeah, it is there. Okay. And you have alternative one, all of that is in there. You can see the BOCC preferred. That's it.
So now that there is a preferred alternative, isn't having all the other alternatives down below it just causing confusion?
Yeah, you can just refer to this one. You know, the planning commission.
People might want to go back.
I know.
It was.
Relive the old days.
Yes.
if, for example, somebody wishes to raise a SEPA issue, it would be really important to have that available.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. That's valid. Continues to fuel the fire.
Okay. I have no other.
Yeah, no other questions. I guess we can adjourn. Thank you very much, Oliver and Matt.
Thank you,
Oliver.
Thank you.
Matt.
Really? Truly. I go through it every 4 years or something. It seems like we're adopting, always changing, but a refresher.
So, Nick, so later, 2 weeks from now, we have another work session. Is that it? And not a hearing.
That's correct.
No hearing until
April. But it's going to be a long work session. It's going to be at least a couple hours because we're going to have a whole bunch of chapters for him.
So are you going to, are we going to be sent the additional things again?
We can if you'd like us to.
It would be nice to have it if you have it ahead of time. Otherwise, I'm...
Oh, I understand.
You know, we can't read everything while we're sitting. And it helps me to read through and understand. So, and it doesn't need to be in binder.
Well, hopefully everything we give you is going to fit into the big bite.
Yeah, in this one.
That's the hope.
Right.
So, as I said, we've got 4 or 5 comp plan chapters and the beginnings of Title 40 are supposed to be done next week.
Okay.
So they're going through final making right now.
Yeah.